Welcome back to the Green Front. I am Betsy Rosenberg, very thrilled to be bringing a new name and voice to the program. That is Stephen Lacey. He is the mega blogger extraordinaire behind Think Progress and climateprogress.org. Joseph Rome has been a frequent guest on this program and also on my former program, EcoTalk, which was heard on the late sometimes great Air America Network, and Joseph's a busy guy, but now I find out there's another guy back there who's been equally proliferative, and Stephen Lacey is joining us now. He is a reporter and blogger for Climate Progress, and I'm looking just at the posts he's put up in the last 5 days, and there's about a dozen stories there, all of which are interesting, timely, and good topics for discussion today. So welcome to the Green Front, Stephen.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you having me on.
How long have you been blogging for climateprogress.org? I just recently heard about you and understand that you're the solar expert, clean energy expert, and now I see that you are, in fact, the author behind so many of these. I mean, Joseph Rome is plenty productive, don't get me wrong, but I always wondered how he could do it all himself. It's nice to know there are a few of you back there producing all these timely, you know, detailed stories that are just so important.
Yeah, Joe is incredibly prolific, and they brought me on to cover a lot of the clean energy business developments in order to help him cover more of the climate change science. So we have a good distribution of coverage. Again, I cover a lot of the market-oriented stuff, and he covers the scientific stuff. And there are just two of us there at Climate Progress, and we have a variety of contributors as well. I've been there for about 6 months, and I spent the 5 years previously covering the business of clean energy, new technologies, international policy, the financial markets, and how those impact project development. So this was a natural extension of what I had been doing, and was a huge fan of Joe's for a long time. So it's been a good marriage between the two of us covering this sector.
I met him at one of my earliest green conferences. I've been covering the Green Beat, which has been a bit too lonely for 15 years, and met him at a conference about that long ago, and he was just really coming out with his first or second book, and so have been following him, and just this is such a perfect forum for him to get his expertise out, and you as well. How many listeners, or I should say how many, I'm going to propose that you guys maybe do a radio show, but how many viewers do you have, readers do you have every day? Because I recommend this, you know, site to so many people who don't know enough about climate change and what's going on. I say this is a must read, and I'm sure a lot of other people have discovered that it is, in fact, indispensable.
Yeah, we have tens of thousands of high-level readers every day, and a lot of folks on the Hill, a lot of people within the business and the scientific community are reading the site. So many of our top posts are getting tens of thousands of hits, and you know, we're getting a couple million hits a month, so pretty
fabulous.
Substantial. And we're the Think Progress brand. We are one brand among the many verticals within the Think Progress brand, which is a very large progressive political blog. We were rated by Technocrati using objective criteria among a variety of blogs, the top green blog on the web. So pretty substantial readership, a lot of people linking to us, a lot of people using social networks to get to us. So we're definitely getting the message out there, but we could always do more, that's for sure, because there's a lot of pushback on these issues, as you well know.
Outnumbered, you know, heavily by the right-wing pseudo think tanks and media interests and mouthpieces, well-paid, well-funded, of course, by the fossil fuel industry and the Koch brothers, as much written about and discussed. I think we need a broadcast outlet for Think Progress and Climate Progress. Maybe we can talk about that, because really these issues are impacting everybody, and they will impact, you know, generations to come. And yet it seems when it comes to mainstream media, these realities, these scientific realities, are just not getting out there, and the political process is so at such an impasse that it's really discouraging, and one can lose hope. And where I go for hope is climateprogress.org. If nothing else, I feel like at least information is getting out there, and I'm very heartened to hear that you do have such a wide following as well. You should. Let's now jump into just some of the big stories. You know, Solyndra, just that's a perfect example of what's wrong, isn't it? I mean, how because of really technology and because of a marketing decision on the part of, you know, Solyndra, you know, that company, and perhaps there were other factors, but that company, you know, failed, and yet that's being so twisted and turned into something it wasn't, which is a sign that the solar industry is not viable, that it's dead, and they're writing it off. In the meantime, how many jobs is solar, you know, providing? What is the promise of solar? In fact, there's an article today that you have on just how, by extending the Treasury grant program for solar, some 37,000 new jobs could be added by 2013.
Yeah, well, and that's 37,000 jobs in just a year, and today we have 100,000 jobs, direct and indirect jobs, in the solar industry alone. It is right now the fastest growing sector in the United States, with over 102% growth last year, with probably over 100% growth this year. No other industry is growing like that in the U.S. right now. And what you see is that the value of that industry is domestic value. So a recent study that came out from a very reputable organization called Green Tech Media Research showed that for every solar installation, for every dollar spent on a solar installation, 73 cents was kept domestically. And,
well, go ahead.
Yeah. That within that study, they showed that we had a $1.9 billion trade surplus with the rest of the world in the solar industry. We hear a lot about the Chinese sending over products for Americans to buy, and that is true that they're selling us a lot of modules, but we're creating the raw materials, the machinery for manufacturing lines, a lot of the equipment, and so we actually have a more than $250 million surplus with China, even though we hear a lot of bad stories about China kicking our pants in the solar sector. So there's a lot of good news coming out of solar right now.
There is, and yet you wouldn't see it on Fox News, not that we look to them for anything real or true, but yet, let's face it, they are, you know, widely watched, widely listened to, you know, the right-wing talk shows. And I say this because it's impacting public opinion. Public opinion shows, you know, fewer Americans have, at least up until recently, been concerned about climate change, that there's doubt, that they think there's still a debate. At a time when we should be having all, you know, good heads and hands on board to address these many, many challenges we face. And isn't it just a bit surreal to you that we're, you know, I know you live in a good progressive place at Think Progress and climateprogress.org. You're surrounded by, you know, people who are, you know, thinking progressively. But I still watch mainstream media, if nothing else, to monitor the lack of green coverage, the lack of good news. I mean, you and I are kind of tripping over each other about the good news about solar with the job prospects and opportunities. And yet, if we don't have, you know, leadership from the government and commitments to really, you know, put R&D into cleaner, greener technologies, that's going to perhaps not send the right message to the marketplace quickly enough to really turn things around.
Yeah, I think with the coverage that you've seen of the Solyndra bankruptcy, many journalists in the mainstream press just show a basic lack of understanding of the forces driving the solar market. And that's particularly bad in the political arena, where these political leaders have such an incredible microphone to spread disinformation. Daryl Issa, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, has said that he expects the solar industry, why shouldn't we expect the entire solar industry to collapse? Another Republican, Cliff Stearns, has said that the United States will never, ever be able to compete with China, and basically said that we shouldn't be developing renewables at all because of that. They've labeled the Solyndra bankruptcy as a case of crony capitalism, as a failure of solar technologies to actually compete. And when in fact, this was a company with a very innovative technology, that faced a lot of headwinds, particularly cheap loans to a variety of solar manufacturers in China, and a structural oversupply of solar panels on the market, which made it very difficult for these panels to compete. And quite frankly, as we've seen, this company suffered from a failure of leadership. I think that we'll see with the FBI investigation that it looks like the company is being investigated for potential fraudulent activity. We don't know what they told the government. There are a lot of forces at play rather than it being a case of crony capitalism or a failure of the technology. So unfortunately, a lot of the spin that's coming out of this story has been making its way into the public consciousness. But you still see that poll after poll shows that Americans are still supportive of renewable energy, and conservatives are still supportive of renewable energy to a large degree. But I think we need to keep hitting back on this and talk about the immense value that solar brings, the enormous cost drop and price drops that we've seen in the sector, and the good job stories that we've seen as a result of developing these technologies.
And before we go on to, I don't want to ask you about the scalability obstacles for solar to really, you know, penetrate mainstream. Just got to say, Fox News commentator Juan Williams actually took a divergent course, surprising, you know, that he came out and said, you know, that the GOP really is blowing it in their attacks on Solyndra. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah. Well, I was surprised that that was published on Fox News' website, because everything that they have published so far has been enormously critical of the president and of the solar industry in general. And some of their television commentators have been so far off the mark, it is mind-blowing to think that they consider themselves business journalists or journalists at all. With that said, this was a very refreshing piece. He criticized leading Republicans for making this investigation less about government oversight of a particular loan, about a company, about the decision to give this loan guarantee to a company, and more about bringing down the president in an election year and indicting the entire solar industry, which, as I said at the beginning of this interview, has shown enormous growth despite the economic headwinds. So that was very refreshing to see, and something that we've been pushing for since this bankruptcy was announced, which is to say, yes, government oversight is important. We want to know where our tax dollars are going, and we want them to be spent wisely. That does mean that this is an indictment of the loan guarantee process, which has been enormously helpful for a variety of project developers, and our green jobs efforts, which have been working. So, that's the conversation we need to be having, a realistic conversation about spending our money wisely, but not using this to attack the president and attack clean energy investments broadly.
Well, I guess it's worth noting that since Juan Williams came from NPR, perhaps his intelligence and independence is eking out there.
Yes,
even though he's surrounded by foxes. So what are the primary obstacles to solar really taking off at this stage, as we see after a year of nuclear disasters and oil disasters and coal mine disasters, that we need to turn increasingly to solar and wind and geothermal, at least assess their viability for real world ramp up?
You know, it's interesting. We have seen pretty significant ramp up. Although solar represents a very small fraction of our energy mix today,
Is it still less than 2%?
It's about 1%. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty small. But that is because the industry has started from basically nothing, and it started with very, very small distributed projects, and now you're starting to see very, very large centralized plants mixed with smaller distributed projects. I mean, this is you're developing projects on a completely different scale than you are, say, a nuclear plant or a coal plant, that these enormous 1-2 gigawatt plants that have been around for a long period of time. It's a different set of infrastructure build-out. With that said, in the U.S., we have seen substantial growth. You know, we're probably going to see a gigawatt and a half of installations. Just to give you some perspective, last year the solar industry shipped and installed 17 gigawatts of projects. That means that's about the equivalent of 17 nuclear power plants. Now, that's not the same type of electricity as a nuclear power plant, which is less variable than a solar electric plant. But you are talking in a year period of time, shipping and developing product for power plants in 1 year, what it would take in some countries like the United States, a decade to build out because of insurance concerns, because of such a massive build out of infrastructure, because of permitting, all of this. So solar is rapidly deployable and it is being deployed at a much faster rate every year. In the U.S., some of the barriers are local. So you have permitting problems. The permitting of projects differs in various municipalities or across state lines, and so developers are constantly having to deal with different requirements for paperwork, for different lead times for actually getting their projects approved, with different rebate programs or a performance-based incentive programs, which requires additional staffing and time to figure out. Solar in the U.S. is a very local game, and that sort of it makes it a little bit more difficult for projects to for developers to deploy projects quickly. Now, with that said, the Department of Energy is working on a competitive program for municipalities to streamline their permitting processes, make web-based permitting processes, which, if done correctly, could lower the cost of installing solar by about 50 cents a watt, which is incredible considering that projects on the commercial scale are being developed at around $3 a watt or so. So you're talking about cutting into costs substantially. And with those changes in permitting, you could spread solar to a variety of states that are not necessarily feasible today. Another hindrance is on the national level, not having a renewable energy standard, a nationwide target for renewables, which could open up a lot of other state markets that don't have targets in place today. Another is inconsistency in support. You talked about the Treasury grant program, which has been instrumental for helping solar companies develop projects. Instead of taking tax credits, which you need to bring in a financial institution or other financier who has the profits to put those tax credits on their balance sheet, because companies are making fewer profits today, they can't take advantage of those tax credits, and it's harder to monetize them. So this grant program, which gives them a cash payment instead to the gives them a cash payment, which is the equivalent of a tax credit, 30% of the project's cost. That grant is worth much more and is much easier to finance. So the solar industry has taken off, but that's going away at the end of the year.
Yeah.
There's not enough tax equity available, and you're probably going to see a slowdown in installations if that program is not renewed. So inconsistency is another major issue.
And what's the likelihood this program will get killed by election year politics at the rate we're going? It doesn't look very hopeful.
You know, talking to folks in Washington, people are not very hopeful that these programs will get renewed. The grant program, and then there's a production tax credit, which works a little bit differently. Same idea, but works a little bit differently for the wind and biomass industries. There's a credit that will expire soon as well. And so the industry associations and companies are working very hard to get these programs passed. But in talking to people, they are not terribly optimistic, which is very sad. And the problem with this grant program is that it is affiliated with the stimulus package. And although the provisions under the stimulus package helped prevent our economy from collapsing and allow the renewable energy industry to continue scaling despite the economic slowdown, the stimulus package has been a dirty word in Washington, and any program affiliated with it is on the chopping block. So we're really trying to push for that the solar industry is a good news story, that this grant program has been working, and that it is completely silly to let election year politics get in the way of the fastest growing industry in the country right now.
And all this would be disturbing enough if we were not in the middle of, you know, so many states in record drought, especially Texas, where I understand now record heat is causing peanut butter prices to skyrocket. I hear cattle are dying, being moved northward. You know, the governor of that state, of course, not being a believer in climate change. Isn't it a bit surreal of a backdrop to be having these arguments, you know, and having to fight so hard for, you know, just changing the subsidy programs and just beginning to try to level the playing field so renewable energy technology can have a ghost of a chance for saving our you-know-whats as we need to make this transition? We have a president who knows we need to transition to renewable energy economy, and yet we're not seeing leadership. We're not seeing legislative action. It's a bit discouraging. I guess that would be an understatement in light of what's going on just climactically, just with our weather. And then you throw in the politics. It seems like we're fighting on so many fronts, aren't we?
We really are. And what we have to realize is that the macro drivers for developing renewable energy and dealing with climate change are still there, no matter what our defunct political leaders say. We are dealing with a finite source of fossil energies. We are dealing with a greater of number of people demanding a cleaner environment and abundant energy. We're dealing with an economic crisis where we need a new set of industrial jobs. And we're dealing with an enormous climate crisis. And all of those are served by efficiency and renewable energy and the other businesses that enable those technologies to let us better utilize energy. And businesses are going ahead with that no matter what our political leaders say. Is it happening on the scale and the pace that we need it to happen? Not necessarily, but it's still happening, and it's happening pretty quickly in spite of the political heel dragging that we see. And so coming from the business community and covering what companies are doing on the local level and on the state level and in different countries around the world, I think that there are a lot of good news stories to tell, and we need to keep focusing on that. Because none of these folks care what we say. They're going to do it because those drivers are there and they can make money doing them. So they're not only doing something that they know is right, but it's profitable to do. So I'm very concerned with our ability to meet the climate challenges that we have before us. I don't think anyone who follows these issues thinks that the pace of, you know, our rate of development of these sectors comes anywhere close to truly reducing climate change CO2 emissions on the gigaton scale that we need to see.
Especially,
but with that said, we are on the right path, and I am hopeful that the business community is going ahead despite the political obstacles.
I think what's most discouraging to me, Stephen, and I welcome any ray of sunshine and bit of optimism you can share with listeners and with myself, because it just seems to me, having covered this beat, following the climate situation very closely for, you know, at least a dozen years, and having read so many books, including one that says 10 years to turn the climate crisis around, you know, following NASA scientist Dr. Jim Hansen's predictions and warnings very closely, these are the times, these are the days, these are the months, the years that we're supposed to be turning this crisis around. And I don't think anyone could have predicted the impasse, the political stalemate, the, you know, deep-pocketed, well-funded opposition spin machine, you know, thanks to the Koch brothers and fossil fuel industry, if you will, that is really thwarting this effort. So that's what I think is most discouraging, is just we don't have time to waste, and we still don't have a very muscular movement in this country. We still don't seem to have enough average Americans engaged in this conversation, and not certainly enough, you know, presence of daily, you know, green focus, scientific focus, green media. That's been my area of passion and focus and fight. So in our last couple of minutes, just, you know, maybe comment on that, and then I would love to have you back to talk about wind, geothermal. Really glad to meet such an expert. There's so much to talk about.
Absolutely. There is really a lot to talk about. And that's one of the reasons why I do remain somewhat hopeful, because, again, as I said, you know, these industries are going to move forward. But I wish I could give you something a little bit more optimistic on the climate side. We are not approaching this with any sort of urgency. on the national level and on the international level. You look at the climate negotiations that we have been undertaking for a long time now. And, well, these diplomats mean well, and they are truly doing their part in trying to engage the international community in discussions around approaching this problem. Local and national self-interests trump our desire to do anything about the climate problem, and I think that's going to continue for some time. Here in the national level, in the U.S., we have special interests that are pumping billions and billions of dollars to maintain the status quo. Some of them say, oh yeah, we like renewables, we'll dabble in renewables here, we'll dabble in renewables there. They greenwash their efforts. Some of them are truly honest about wanting to develop renewables and are not greenwashing at all. But none of them are doing it with the level of investment and the sense of urgency that we need to see. So I think that's very distressing. And I try to do my best to focus on the positive trends that are happening within the clean energy business, because there really are a lot of good news stories to tell. I'm really saddened and very concerned about our ability to address the climate crisis, and I think it's going to get a heck of a lot worse before we truly start to make it better.
Okay, well, we'll end on a positive note that I have found you such a wonderful expert, my new favorite climate blogger. I'm hoping maybe you can come back as early as next week and do part two. We didn't even get into talking about the tar sands, so many other big stories. And
I'd love to.
Wonderful. I will be in touch with you. I hope our listeners have enjoyed this. I'm going to put it up on Facebook. People can get an education just by listening to your comments for the last 25 minutes. And if you want more, go to climateprogress.org, where Stephen Lacey, who we've just been talking to, and Joseph Rome, climate bloggers and experts extraordinaire, can tell you everything you need to know. This is what needs to get out there on American Airways, at least, a small counterpart to the vast, right-wing, environmental, bogus, garbage crap, let me just say it, that's out there that is harming all of us and harming our children's future and hurting our country. It is not American to not be dealing with these scientific realities, and let's just continue to work together to do our part to get this information out there. It's critically important. Thanks so much for joining me on the Green Front this week. See you next time. I'm Betsy Rosenberg, wishing you a great green week.